This is the audio version of the book Jailer by Acharya Vijay Abhishekar Suriji Maharaj in the voice of Rahul Kapoor Jain. Chapter 2, Karmasatta, the only authority to punish. Question: in the worldly court, it is often seen that if the jailer is insolent, he may take advantage of the prisoner's helplessness and may slap him a few times, even if the court has not ordered him to do so. He may make the prisoner do some of his personal work. Is the same not possible even with our neighbor or any other person causing harassment to us? Karmasatta may not have punished us, as we may not have committed a crime, and yet it is possible that the neighbor may have wished to harass us. Wouldn't he be considered evil at such a time? Answer: no soul can subject another soul to any punishment which has not been ordained by Karmasatta. This should be etched onto our hearts. Only Karmasatta has the right to punish and no one else, however superior the authority, power, wealth or intelligence of any soul, however much he may wish and try to pester another soul. But if Karmasatta has not ordered the other soul to be punished, even the superior authority can do nothing to harm him. The story of Aghat Karma is an infallible example of this. Once there was a country called Avanti, whose capital was Vishalanagari. It was being ruled by a king named Sugatit. The name of the royal priest of that country was Gnanagarbha. Once when the royal court was in session, a servant came in and whispered something into Gnanagarbha's ears, hearing which Gnanagarbha's eyes widened. With much happiness and astonishment, he uttered, "What are you saying? Can it really be true?" "It is not possible." The king was very curious to know what it was all about. He asked the royal priest to relate what he had heard. The priest replied, "My maid servant has given birth to a son. When this child was in the mother's womb, the mother had dreamt that the child would become a great person in the future. Today, this child is born. I have been informed by the servant that he has a disc, a bow, and other auspicious marks on his body." The king asked the significance of these marks. The priest said, "The child will become the ruler of this country, and that too during your lifetime." Each of these words pierced the king's ears like a thorn. "So it will be the son of the maid servant, and not my son Prince Vikram Singh who will become the king? Impossible! Absolutely impossible!" He knew that a person born with marks like a discus or a bow was born for greatness. This thought made him fearful. In the end, he decided to kill the child. On the king's order, two servants abducted the newly born child from the priest's home in order to kill him. They left the city, but on seeing the child who was so beautiful as God's own child, they started thinking, "Such a small child, what has he done to the king for the king to want to kill him?" They did not have the heart to kill such a fair, beautiful, and innocent child. They thought, "Let us leave him alone somewhere. Let him be at the mercy of the animals and birds." They left the child on the edge of an unused well situated in a very old garden. In the morning, on reaching the gardener was astonished beyond words. The garden was so old that rarely did any trees flower. That day he felt as if spring had arrived and the garden was in full bloom. Each tree was laden with fruits and flowers. What was this miracle? When he looked around, he saw a smiling, gurgling child at the edge of the well. The child, who looked as beauteous as God's child, was such that even an enemy would find him adorable. He picked up the child, bestowed him with kisses, took him home to his childless wife and told her, "From today, no one will call you barren." This happening was so unlikely that the child was named Aghat Kumar. The gardener's wife, whose joy knew no bounds, started rearing the child with a lot of care. One day, she went to the king's court to give him a garland, taking the child with her. When Gnanagarbha saw the child, he knew at once who the child was. He knew that the child had been kidnapped, but did not know his whereabouts. He could not take his eyes off the child. On noticing this, the king asked the priest the reason for his heightened interest in the child. The priest, who was forthright, said, "This child is the son of my maidservant who is going to sit on your throne." The king was again drowned in worry. He called the two servants, who, on sensing the king's anger, admitted immediately to have left the child at the edge of the well. On further probing, it was found that the gardener had discovered the child there. It was established that it was undoubtedly the same child. The king could not bear to have the child take the throne. He called for the cruelest executioner and ordered him to kill the child. The child was forcibly taken from the gardener's wife. The heartless executioner, who was no less cruel than the god of death himself, left for the jungle with the child. Aghat Kumar was handsome, playful, and cheerful. He knew no fear and playfully pulled the executioner's beard, calling him Bapa, father, in an innocent childlike way. Pulling the beard, if seen as a prank, becomes provocative, but if seen as a child's play, becomes endearing. The hard-hearted, wicked executioner was more likely to take it as a prank. He could have admonished the child for causing him pain and calling him his father, but Karmasatta had not decided to punish this child. In fact, the child was to be rewarded. As a result, even the very cruel executioner saw the painful act of the beard being pulled as the child's being playful. How can I kill a child who's calling me Bapa, father? It would be a sin to kill such an innocent child. At the same time, he knew that if he did not kill the child, he would be disobeying the king's order. He feared losing his job and, more importantly, his life. In this confused state of mind, he reached a jungle where there was a temple of Yaksha. The child was thrilled to see the idol of pot-bellied and bearded Yaksha. Taking small strides, he reached the idol and climbed on it. He started playing with Yaksha's beard. Seeing this, the executioner knew he could not commit the sin of killing this child and fled, leaving Aghat Kumar engrossed in play, all alone in a terrible jungle. The unfortunate people without punya may lose sleep worrying, whereas the fortunate ones, due to the power of their merits, cannot be hurt even by evil supernatural beings, let alone humans. Therefore, the learned advised you to stop committing sins. Once you have collected a treasure of merits, there wouldn't be room or need for worry. Nature will take care of you. Demigods are generally so engrossed in their own world that for thousands of years, their attention is not drawn to their own temples on earth. Aghat Kumar was a virtuous person and had lots of merits to his credit. In his case, nature was ready and eager to serve him, and it drew the demigod's attention to the temple. The demigod, with his avadigyan, saw that the child was all alone in the temple. In this version of the story, it is shown that the executioner does not kill the child but just leaves him on his own device in the jungle. In another version, it is shown that the executioner, at the cost of his own life, not only decides not to kill him but also raises and protects him secretly. It is the same executioner who does not have any kindness in him. When he was reproached for making killing his profession, he would show off his atheism and announce that he had no belief in punya, pap, or parlok. Who transforms such a cruel person, an atheist, into a merciful believer? This is the immeasurable power of Karmasatta. It proclaims to turning a heartless person into a kind person. It can convert an atheist to a theist and a perpetrator to a protector. It is as if Karmasatta is proclaiming, what can't I do if I wish to reward someone with long life? In July of 2006, in the region of Kurukshetra, a 6-year-old boy called Prince fell into 60 feet deep bore. The mouth of the bore was so narrow that it was impossible to have the child lifted out. He was not the son of any minister, a big industrialist, or an army officer. He was a son of a poor laborer. Poor laborers and their families aren't valued by the elite in our country, and no one would have affected by the loss of this child. However, nature was on his side. It directed the Indian Army to undertake the most frantic and painstaking rescue operation of recent times. It involved everyone from the villagers to the firemen, from the police to the army. Millions of TV watchers prayed for him. The army dug a parallel well and reached the trapped boy by drilling a tunnel. The little boy rode out of the black hole after 50 hours. In 2010, 33 miners were trapped in a Chilean mine, 2,000 feet under the surface of the earth. The people of Chile, the world, and the miners themselves had lost all hope for survival. However, Karmsatta wanted them to live. By an unique, unimaginable operation, they were all pulled out alive 70 days later. Nature really cares. It made sure that the demigod was not offended by the child's playful behavior. In fact, the demigod felt affection towards the child and wished him to be looked after and reared with much care. He then made Devdhar an extremely wealthy but childless caravaner who was camping in the same jungle have a dream. He showed Devdhar that in one of his temples nearby, there was a beautiful child that he should take him home and bring him up. Devdhar's happiness was boundless. He considered himself very fortunate to have been blessed with a child with radiant beauty. After thanking the demigod over and over again and worshipping him with a lot of devotion, he left for his country. Devdhar's wife not only got a child, she got to experience the immense joy of motherhood. With passage of time, the child, who by then had grown into a young lad, developed an extraordinary sharpness for understanding along with qualities like humbleness. Due to his keen enthusiasm for study, he soon mastered all the scriptures and knowledge about weaponry. He started training under his father and honed his business skill. Once while traveling for his business, he reached the city of Vishala. Aghad Kumar went to the king's court to gift him very expensive and thoroughbred horses which could run faster than the wind, and also to seek his permission to do business in the city. The priest Gnanagarbha noticed Aghad and his eyes shone. On noticing the characteristic mark on his body, he knew that this definitely was Aghad Kumar. Later, he spoke about it to the king in private. The king was shell-shocked, as if struck by a lightning. He called for the executioner, who had no choice but to speak the truth about what had transpired. In the book Shraddhavedi Granth, the history of Vallabhib Ang is mentioned. In the village of Pali, in the region of Marwar, there lived two brothers by the name Kakauk and Patak. The younger brother was very rich, whereas the elder brother was poor. His bad karmas were so hard on him that he was forced to do arduous labor in his younger brother's farm. One day, after a hard day of work, he fell into deep sleep. But at midnight, he was woken up and chastised by his younger brother. "Do you have any sense of responsibility? Water has started overflowing from all the farm beds and you have fallen asleep as if with no care in the world? Is this any way to do a job? How can you expect a salary without doing any work? Get up and get back to the farm." Kakao got up unwillingly. On reaching there, he was surprised to see some men working in the field, but none looked familiar. He asked, "Who are you all who are working in the middle of the night?" "We are the servants who have been bought by your brother because of his merit. Look at nature's ways. If it wishes to gratify, it can make demigods to serve you." Kakao could not resist asking, "Is it possible for me to get people who would work for me?" The reply was, "Go to Vallabhipur, where your good fortune awaits you." Kakao traveled a great distance and underwent a lot of trouble to reach Vallabhipur. He started selling assorted things like oil and spices. His business grew and he set up a small shop. People found it difficult to call him by his own name, so they started calling him Ranka Seth. He became famous by that name. Once, a cloth merchant from Girnar came to the city. In Girnar, he had strived very hard to master the art of making Siddharasa, just a drop of which had the capacity to turn a mana of iron into gold, and had finally succeeded in attaining it. He filled up an earthen pot with this potion and brought it along with him, guarding it with his life. The merchant found a home next to Ranka Seth's shop. Gradually, a friendship developed between them. In the meantime, having heard about the glory of the holy place of Somnath, he decided to go on a pilgrimage. He did not want to risk carrying the valuable pot with him. Instead, he decided to request the Seth to keep it until his return. Ranka Seth asked him to leave it anywhere in the shop where he deemed fit. The cloth merchant tied the pot, secured it high up and out of reach in the shop, and left for Prabha's patan. One day, Ranka Seth decided to light a stove in the shop and put a griddle on it. It so happened that the stove was placed just under the pot. Due to the heat from the stove, the pot overflowed and just a drop of the potion fell on the griddle, which instantly turned to gold. Ranka was truly amazed. He put another griddle on the stove, and on the pot being heated again, another drop fell on the second griddle, transforming it into a golden one too. Ranka Seth realized that the pot was filled with a magical potion, which had the power to turn iron into gold. He became greedy. He removed all the necessary important things from the shop and then set it on fire, making it look like an accident, leaving no possibility of returning the pot. He pretended to be alarmed and shouted, "Fire! Fire!" All the people gathered around and together they extinguished the fire. Seth made a new, bigger shop. He had made a heap of gold and had become a very wealthy merchant. The cloth merchant, on his return from the pilgrimage, went to Seth to collect his pot in good faith. Seth made a sad face and continued his pretense of the shop being gutted down in a sudden fire in which the pot had been destroyed. The cloth merchant noticed that there was a vast difference in the Seth's prosperity in the short time that he had been away. He realized that Seth had committed a fraud. What could he do? He suddenly remembered that when he was drawing Siddharasas from the well and filling a pot with it, he had heard a mysterious voice which had told him, "This one is in the name of Ranka." He had emptied out the pot, and when he had started filling it again, he heard the voice repeat, "This one is in the name of Ranka." The cloth merchant reconciled to the fact that he was not destined to possess the pot. It was in Ranka's fate to have it. Whatever had to happen had happened. He had lost the potion which had the power to make gold worth billions, and yet he accepted Karmasatta's verdict without losing his composure. How many people can take such a grave loss lightly and refrain from reacting without feeling anger, aversion, or revenge? Reverting back to our story, based upon Aghath's mother's dream and the characteristic marks on his body, the priest had made a forecast that the child was going to become king. Moreover, despite King Sughat's many attempts to kill the child, nature had not only saved him unfailingly, but had also made the garden bloom in its full glory. The child had been handed over to the extremely cruel and heartless executioner, yet the executioner had risked his life by not obeying the king's order to kill the child. The king was aware of all of the above. He could have accepted nature's decision to make Aghath the king, understanding this to be his fate. If it is his destiny to become the king, so be it. However, he was not prepared to accept the fact that it was only nature's intention that prevailed. He had a false notion that since he was the king, he had the power to change predetermined course if he so wished. He started planning other devious means to kill Aghath. He persuaded Devdhar to let him have Aghath, as he was an expert at weaponry. He sent Aghath to Mathura to undertake the task of its systematic administration. Aghath received a very grand welcome there. He thought of appointing loyal, skilled officers and strong soldiers under him. He called for 1,000 such men from his native place and designated them to different positions. He then started living as the ruler of Mathura. This irked King Sughath even more and fueled his intention to take Aghath's life. He came up with a plan. He summoned Aghath to Vishala and told him that Prince Vikram Singh was fighting on the battlefield and he needed him to aid him in preparing the army. Aghath Kumar was thrilled and did not for a minute think that there was something amiss. He told the king, "You have obliged me by assigning me to this task. I will leave tomorrow morning itself." The king said, "Prepare to leave. I will write a message for the prince." Next morning, Aghath and his cavalry departed, taking a sealed letter from the king. Aghath did not have the slightest idea about the letter's content, in which it was mentioned that he was to have been given Talaputta Visha. They journeyed on. The retinue reached the temple of the aforesaid Yaksha and set up camp there. Agath was totally unaware that in his childhood he had played with the same Yaksha's beard, and this was the Yaksha who had appeared in Devdutt's dream, bidding him to bring him up. Due to his auspicious merits, he had become nature's creditor. So nature had no option but to be extra vigilant. It diverted the Yaksha's clairvoyance ability to the said temple. On applying his avadigyan, the Yaksha recognized Agath Kumar immediately and also learned about the contents of the letter. With his divine power, he changed the content of the letter to an order that the princess was to be married to the bearer of the letter. Agath reached his destination and handed the letter to Prince Vikram Singh. There being no reason to doubt the king's signature and his seal, the astrologers were asked to look for the most auspicious time, who then prophesied the present moment to be the most opportune one. The prince assumed that the king knew that it was the most appropriate time, and since it was not possible for the king to recall the princess to Vishala, the marriage was to be solemnized then and there. Thus, Agath Kumar wed the princess. When the king received the news, it was as if he had been hit by a thunderbolt. He still didn't learn his lesson. He conceived yet another plan to finish Agath off, notwithstanding the fact that it would have meant that his own daughter would have been widowed. He invited Agath to Vishala. Agath was surprised and failed to comprehend the chain of events. First, the talk of war, then the marriage, and now the departure for Vishala. Nevertheless, he left along with his wife and brother-in-law and reached Vishala, where he was received by the king and his subjects with a lot of pomp and grandeur. The king told Agath in private, "You're married, but there is one more ritual to be performed." "Which one?" "The ritual of offering eatables to our family goddess tomorrow, which happens to be the 14th night of the dark phase of the lunar month." Agath agreed to perform the ritual. The king got the offering readied. He also summoned the executioners and instructed them to kill the person who brought the plate of offering to the temple at midnight. The king bid Agath a farewell, thinking that it was his last one. Agath left with a plate of eatables and other devotional offerings. On his way out, he met Vikram Singh, who asked him where he was headed at that hour. Agath told him everything. "Brother-in-law, the temple is very far from here and the road is terrible. It is pitch dark now and you are new to the place. Give the offerings to me. I have been to this temple several times and I am familiar with the road. I will go and offer the eatables there myself." Agath gave him the offerings. On reaching the temple, the prince was pierced with arrows expelled from the bows of the executioners who were hiding. The king was totally devastated on hearing this news the next morning. This sudden shock changed his way of thinking. It led him to repent and accept the eternal truth that what was ordained could not be altered. To make amends and to atone for his sins, he abdicated his kingdom in favor of Agath and accepted monkhood. He accomplished omniscience after years of hard work and subsequently visited the city of Vishala. King Agath came to pay his obeisance along with his subjects and listen to the sage's nectar-like sermon. Finally, the king asked the sage, "O Lord, why were there so many ups and downs in my life?" The venerable omniscient then brought up the past. "Once there was a country called Vidarbha, whose capital city was called Kundanpur. It was being ruled by King Purandar, who had a son named Gajabhanjan, Agath's past life. One day, while playing in the garden, the prince espied a monk practicing penance. Instead of noticing the dignity of austerity of the monk, he saw his body and his clothes, which were smeared with dirt and dust. He felt a disgust towards the monk. 'He is so filthy.' This was the crime for which he had the misfortune of being born as a son of female servant in the next life. The prince's friend, who was a devout, paid his obeisance to the monk, touched his feet and sat there to listen to him speak. Seeing this, the prince also followed suit. The sage then delivered a sermon manifesting the greatness of non-violence and kindness, which touched the prince's heart. He vowed never to kill an innocent mobile creature. He also took the opportunity of offering the first meal to the great sage who had been on a month-long fast. A malpractice of slaughtering a male buffalo on the occasion of Navratri was prevalent in those days. King Purandar ordered Prince Gajabanjan to sacrifice the buffalo with a sword. The prince was in a dilemma. On the one hand was his vow of non-violence, and on the other was the command of his father, the king. He lifted the sword on the king's insistence. The moment he thought about his vow, the sword stopped midway. The king gestured him to try again. The prince lifted his sword to strike again, but it abruptly stopped, having come within 1 inch of the buffalo's neck. Such a thing was repeated 4 times. For these past acts of aghat, there were 4 attempts on his life. Finally, the prince told the king, "Father, pardon me, but I won't be able to slaughter the buffalo. I will adhere to my vow even at the cost of my life." He maintained his vow till the end of his life. On hearing about this incident from his past life, Aghat attained Jatismaran. Having totally immersed himself in detachment, he then accepted monkhood. After making arduous effort to achieve his life goal, he attained Keval Gyan and ultimately salvation. What is apparent from the above story is that even a person holding a powerful position, like that of a king, cannot give an intended punishment even after many attempts, if the court of Karmasatta has not willed it so. On the contrary, all of those futile attempts prove to be the ones which give the other person a gratifying reward. Isn't it better to become a creditor in the eyes of Karmasatta by performing good deeds? Another example reiterating the same theory is that of Mainasundari. She does not accept her father's assertion that he could make somebody happy if he so wished and do the opposite if he so desired. She believed that whatever karma determined would be what ultimately happened. The father thought, "Let me show her how unhappy I can make her and how happy I can make Sursundari for agreeing with me and acknowledging my power." King Prajapal, who was enraged at his daughter Maina's answer, married her off to a leper. While pleased with his other daughter, Sursundari, he married her to Prince Aridaman. However, ultimately what transpired was what Karmasatta had willed. The king wanted to destroy Maina's life by marrying her to a leper, but Karmasatta did not wish that such a misfortune should befall Maina. Karmasatta had planned a reward for her. Hence, Karmasatta sent the most fortunate, the most virtuous and meritorious Prince Sripal in guise of Umbarana to be Maina's husband. Maina not only was happy, on the contrary, her happiness was boundless. On the other hand, Karmasatta wanted to punish Sursundari. The man whom she wed, thinking him to be fortunate and brave, turned out to be a coward, so much so that she had to become a dancer to earn her livelihood. We must etch this fact into our psyche, that when Karmasatta wants to reward, it does not punish. A person may want to harass another person and may make umpteen attempts to do so, but he will not succeed in his motive. It is thus evident that no soul has the authority to harass another soul, and since he lacks the authority, he, the jailer, may move heaven and earth, and yet he is unable to mete out a punishment which has not been ordained by Karmasatta. This establishes the fact that a jailer of the worldly court may harass someone more than what was ordered, but a jailer of the court of nature cannot increase the punishment even by a degree at his own will. If Karmasatta wishes to punish, however much a man may try, he cannot save himself from it. At that time, even a protector becomes a perpetrator. Who killed Indira Gandhi? Was it not her own bodyguards? Was there a lapse in the security? Her residence was on Safdarganj Road in New Delhi. For security reasons, no vehicles were permitted to ply in that area to safeguard against terrorist attacks. Security guards were put on a weekly drill to check their readiness at all times to save the Prime Minister in case of an attack. They were trained to take the brunt of the attack in order to save the Prime Minister. The guards who were trained to be quick, nimble and quick-witted in an emergency could not display their prowess when the time came. An ambulance used to be parked outside the Prime Minister's home around the clock. The day she was killed, the ambulance was still there, but the driver and the keys to the ambulance were missing. She had to be driven to the hospital in an ambassador car. All the VIPs are treated at New Delhi's All India Institute of Medical Sciences. The Prime Minister's residence has a wireless communication service with the hospital, whereby the hospital can be informed whenever any incident occurs. There is an idiom in English: man proposes, God disposes. A man may have intended something, but God overturns that proposition. We disagree with this. God can never hurt us in any way. He, in fact, will improve the circumstances. We can certainly say, man proposes, karmasatta disposes. It is karmasatta who topples a man's intentions. A young man wanted to get married and settle down. His parents found him a suitable bride and got him married to her. A year passed without any incident, but then her true inner dispositions surfaced. She was so quarrelsome that she used to erupt in anger at the slightest provocation. The husband tiptoed around her, giving her little cause to fight. He would think several times before doing or saying anything, dreading its outcome. Yet, the wife would find the smallest excuse to start a quarrel. The husband's life became unbearable. He lamented his fate and wondered why others' wives were so loving and peaceful and his own wife so discordant. What had he done to deserve such a belligerent wife? Only one out of 15 animals has a harness on its neck. This is not the fault of the harness, it is the animal's fault. In the same way, whose fault is it for getting a contentious wife? It is indeed the fault of the husband. A man married to such a wife should understand that he must have been an undisciplined person in his past life, who was totally out of control. This is nature's way to restrain this person by giving him such a wife in this life. Karmasatta deprived him of all his dreams of a happy life. One might have a wife with an eccentric, doubting nature, or maybe husband with an angry disposition who is home all day and does not do much with his time. Married life may be unhappy and insufferable for any one of the above reasons, but instead of blaming each other, one should accept the fact that it is one's past karma for which he or she is being punished by karmasatta. By doing so, one can remain calm and avoid feeling animosity or aversion towards the other and save oneself from more demerit. The fact of the matter is, man proposes and karmasatta disposes. There was a wireless communication service between the hospital and the Prime Minister's residence for her security, but karmasatta disrupted this foolproof arrangement. On the day Indira Gandhi was killed, the wireless service was out of order. The doctors at the hospital found out about what had transpired only when she was brought to the hospital in an ambassador car. As a result, they had no chance to prepare for the emergency. Indiraji's blood group was Rh negative. The hospital always used to be well stocked with it, but unfortunately, it had run out of it that day. Satwant Singh and Biyan Singh, who pumped 30 bullets into Indira Gandhi with a Sten gun, were not hired by the government to assassinate her. They were employed for her security. The bullets given to them were for her protection. When karmasatta is displeased, a protector becomes a perpetrator. A man may try to create favorable situations, but if karmasatta wants to punish, it can throw all the arrangements made by a man into disarray. It can transform a favorable situation into an unsuitable one, or it can create any hindrance so that eventually the soul has to undergo a punishment. There are numerous such examples in the scriptures.